Well, hello, welcome back to the Viewfinders Photography Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Dargy, and today I'm talking with David Merrin, a wildlife and nature photographer specializing in the polar regions. I'll introduce David in a minute, but first, how are you getting on this week? We're still in lockdown here in Scotland, so there's really not much to report, but I am getting to spend loads of time with my little girl, which is fun. And I've been trying to line up some future podcast guests, which has been tricky. I think everybody's a bit locked down and a bit burned out, so but lots of great new episodes on the way in the next few weeks anyway. I also did a talk for a camera club via Zoom in Ayr, which is great. Ayr's on the other side of the country than where I am here in Aberdeen, and always nice to talk photography with people who actually want to hear it. So anyway, okay, don't forget to connect with me on the Viewfinders Instagram at Viewfinders Podcast. Head to view-finders.co.uk to find out all about what I do, and you can get my free long exposure photography tutorial there too. Of course, subscribe, rate and review the show if you like it. It really makes a difference, and it's the best way to help get the show in front of other listeners. And you can check out some previous episodes while you're there. Speaking of previous episodes, segue, one of my favourite guests from season one was Mark McCall. He's one of Scotland's best landscape photographers, and I'm so excited to be hosting an evening with Mark McCall, sponsored by MPB. This is the first in a new series of events called Viewfinders Live, kind of a spin-off of the podcast, and it's an online event on Monday, the 15th of February, 2021 at 7:30 p.m. UK time. Mark is going to give a fantastic presentation about his beautiful photography from Scotland to Sweden, many other cold places. And you can ask Mark anything in the live Q&A, and you could even win a £50 voucher courtesy of the event sponsor MPB. It's going to be a great night for anyone with an interest in landscape photography, and tickets are available now on Eventbrite for just £11.37. That's £10 plus the booking fee. The event is sponsored by MPB. MPB is a place where you can buy and sell used photography equipment. Buying used is a great way to get the kit you really want while saving some money. I've used MPB over the years, and I want to thank them for giving me a £50 voucher to give away at Viewfinders Live, an evening with Mark McCall on Monday the 15th of February 2021 on Zoom. Hope I can see you there. Okay, my guest today, David Merrin, a wildlife and nature photographer from Vancouver, Canada, who specializes in the polar regions. David's striking portfolio features a blend of expansive landscape shots and intimate wildlife images. David spends up to 6 months a year at the poles after a chance meeting led to him becoming a photography guide with Quark Expeditions. Our conversation covers David's approach to photographing different penguin species, how he handles encounters with polar bears, the benefit of putting in time of learning animal behavior, and why he always packs a 7-meter pole in his camera kit, and much, much more. Hope you enjoy this episode. Here's my conversation with David Merrin. Hi, David. Welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Graham. Thanks for having me.
So you're in Vancouver, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I'm in West Vancouver, just over the bridge from downtown. Yeah, place called Horseshoe Bay. It's like a little village where the you take the ferry to get to Vancouver Island, actually. It's like a tiny little village that gets busy in like small periods in the summer, like very like half an hour periods, and then they jump on the ferry and it's quiet again.
What kind of city is Vancouver? I've seen pictures, it looks really nice with the mountains in the backdrop. It looks amazing.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Right now it's really nice because like all the mountains are on certain days. Today it's snow capped, so it snowed last night, so it's like a white little cap on top of there. The ski hills 15 minutes just basically like right above us here. Vancouver's a big city, over 2 million people, maybe up to 3 million people now, so it's getting much bigger. Downtown's like a very metropolis, basically. You can get away from downtown quickly and get into the mountains, like I said, skiing, or you can go to the beach, there's beaches around, or you can go to Whistler, a famous ski resort, which is like an hour from my door here, hour and 15 minutes maybe. So there's lots to do if you like the outdoors. And we're on the ocean, of course, so yeah, if you have a boat, very handy.
Cool. And I met a guy from Vancouver on a flight once, and he's like a dog walker, do you know what I mean? Dog hiking. He takes the dog to the mountains, and it just was a really cool guy. I thought that was a pretty good job, actually.
There's a couple around here. I see the locals, they have a, I mean, they're all around the world, but yeah, it's an intense job at times. You see, like, sometimes they have like up to like 10 in there. It looks, yeah, I think there's a skill to it. I've seen some others that look like they're struggling big time, but yeah, if you can control them all, yeah, it's a good job.
How about you introduce yourself, and for the listeners who might not know you or your photography, tell us about the kind of photography that you do.
Yeah, David Marin. I do basically wildlife photography. I guess that's what I'm more known for, or what I like to do best. So wildlife nature photography. I work mostly in the polar regions. I work for an expedition company that goes to Antarctica and the Arctic. I spend probably like 3 to 4 months in Antarctica every year, and then maybe like 1 to 2 months in the Arctic. So mostly more in Antarctica than the Arctic, but I do both. And yeah, so then I've just throughout that, I've been doing that for 8 years. So that's kind of built up my portfolio, I guess, of wildlife from these polar regions.
What I loved about your photography, well, first of all, it's a bit niche, isn't it, to be a specialist in polar regions?
Yeah, I'm super lucky to be able to go down to these really remote places that basically very few, essentially, people get to go.
Well, I just, what caught my eye was just the sort of, you capture this, a mixture of the scope and scale of the place, mm-hmm. You know, the landscape, as well as these beautiful, intimate scenes with the wildlife, mm-hmm. especially the penguins, and sometimes the grand scene with the intimate moment at the same frame. So I thought it was really great photography. And but I'm always curious about how people got into photography. When was your first kind of aha moment about photography?
For my first aha moment, I guess it was when I got like a 50 millimeter lens. I bought like a digital camera. So I was always into like photography, like as a hobby sort of. And my dad had a film camera, so we'd go to Europe every year, which is like the Tour de France. And I would always have like a couple, my dad would give me like a roll or two if he was feeling rich at the time. But yeah, so I'd always be taking photos of the Tour de France, and I really enjoyed that. But I never thought of it as a career. Then I bought a digital camera maybe like 12, 14 years ago, something like that. And I bought a 50 millimeter lens that I heard was a good idea. And just using that and using the aperture, the wide aperture of like 1.8, that kind of gave me like that aha moment that you can, the thing you can do with a camera that you can't do with maybe just my phone. I probably didn't have a phone at the time, but like a cheaper camera, basically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A disposable camera, which I tend to, when I was backpacking a lot, I would always buy these disposable cameras that didn't have the aperture, of course. So
did your family travel a lot when you were a kid, or?
Yeah, no, my family always, we travel to Europe every year. My parents are English, so we'd visit England basically every summer, but we'd also be traveling around Canada and United States a little bit. And so that kind of got my sense of traveling going. And then when I finished school, I just started backpacking basically in my whole 20s and early 30s. I was living overseas.
All right. So, okay. Interesting. Tell us about that period of your life. Where did you go with your backpack?
I lived in England for a couple of years, just basically anywhere that would give me a visa. So being in the Commonwealth, I lived in Australia for 2 years. I lived in New Zealand for a year. Mm-hmm. I lived around Europe for about a year, and I lived in China for a year. I was an English teacher there. I went to a few other places, just kind of like bumming around, essentially. Like, I always had like a little camera, but again, it wasn't anything like, I don't know. I didn't know you could do it as a career. So it's kind of something that kind of grew, I guess.
And so, okay, so you've got the travel, you've got the wildlife, you've got the photography. Yeah. When did those three things kind of blend into the one sort of passion, if you see what I mean?
Well, I guess it slowly, maybe it was like the birth of digital photography, to be honest. Like I said, I got that digital, I think it was a Sony digital camera, and I just started taking more photos and just looking for like local wildlife in Vancouver. So there isn't as great as wildlife like in Antarctica, but we still have like nice birds here and whatnot. And I just kind of like started taking more and more photos. And essentially I just got very, very fortunate that I knew somebody that worked in Antarctica, and they thought I would be a good fit. And that was about it. And I ended up getting a job down there. So it's kind of how it all unraveled.
Okay. And so was that the first time you went sort of, you went polar, as it were?
Yeah. I was photographing a wedding actually. And, it was the bride's daughter, sorry, the bride's not daughter, the bride's sister. And, she'd been working down there for 1 year and now I've been working with her for 8 years and she's a really good friend of mine. And, luckily she thought I would be a good fit for the job. So that's how I ended up going down there for my first time. Yeah.
Okay. And so that's with, is it with Quark that you work? Is that right?
Yeah. It's called Quark Expeditions. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I was really interested to hear about how those trips work. So, what's a typical expedition like from the point of view of the traveler?
Okay. Well, they're mostly ship based because we're going to remote, areas that you need to, for the most part, get there via ship. So we're going on ships. And it could be anywhere from maybe 60 to 200 people, average about 150 to 200, to be honest, passengers. And then we're going on trips that go from anywhere from maybe 8 days to up to 30 days. It just depends. Average 10 to 15 days. And while you're on the trips, we're visiting a couple places a day. We're going out probably on little Zodiacs that I'm driving and my colleagues are driving. We're going to shore, we're going on hikes. And then when we're back on the ship, we're also doing like educational talks. So everybody on my expedition team has a specialty. For example, mine is photography. So I'll be doing talks on photography throughout the trip. The glaciologists, there's historians, marine biologists, penguinologists, and they're all doing talks as well. So surprising to most, it ends up being like quite an educational trip as well as being exploration kind of trip outside. Yeah.
What's a typical guest looking to see? Are they looking to see whales, or it just depends on the person?
Depends where they go or what they've been told they could probably see. But to be fair, like going to Antarctica, the majority of people are there to see penguins, to cross the seventh continent off their list. And I guess icebergs and whales and whatnot, but for the most part, people are, of course, penguins are the main attraction.
Okay. And so are you working with guys who are quite photography buffs, or is it more like they're more into the wildlife?
There are like photography buffs here and there, and there's groups that come on, but for the most part, it's just your average tourist that wants to go to Antarctica or the Arctic. Depending, yeah.
Yeah, depending which way the boat goes. I was, just on that note, I don't know if this is a stupid question. What's the difference really between being at the North and the South Pole? I mean, for you being in that place, does it have a different feel or a different vibe to it?
Okay, well, Antarctica is land surrounded by ice, and the Arctic is ice surrounded by land. It can look similar, like depending where you are, of course. There are places where I'll go in the Arctic and be like, oh, it feels like we're in Antarctica right now, if you didn't know where you were. But at times, it just depends. I mean, there's such a varying degree of landscapes in the Arctic, quite different, whereas in Antarctica, fairly similar. Yeah, but both similar weather conditions, you know, cold, snow, ice. Wildlife is much different. It's much more like, well, don't see much wildlife in the Arctic. Most of the wildlife in the Arctic is trying to get away from you. Whereas most of the wildlife in Antarctica is not worried about us at all. Mm. So it's very easy to find wildlife and be around it.
Yeah, it seems like you can get quite close to the penguins in particular. So how does that work then? Do you take the Zodiac from the ship, and what's the sort of process there?
Okay, yeah. So they're living in colonies, right? So then their colony is the same each year. They don't move. There's no reason for them to, unless a weather change or something like that. They're basically at the same colony, so it's extremely easy for us to find them. So for the most part, we'd go, jump in the Zodiac, and we'd go to shore, and then you just walk on shore, and you just observe the penguin colony from a certain distance, a safety distance, like 5 meters or 15 meters. But then when we're on the Zodiacs, Zodiacing around, they're in the water. They're swimming, or else they're on ice resting or socializing or whatnot. So we're just kind of like scooting around. And as a photographer, I'm just kind of going around looking for the best images I can find of penguins, whether it be like the certain iceberg they're on, the background, different kind of light, different kind of penguins, of course. So yeah, there's a few factors going into it for me.
So you're leading that Zodiac boat that goes out. So you're able to get yourself in just the right spot then, I guess.
Yep. So that was part of like getting the job, actually, was I could drive a boat, luckily enough, and I had experience on it. So yeah, so we all, for the most part, drive our own Zodiac around with about 8 to 10 passengers. And yeah, and it's great for me. I get to go around with all my camera gear and find, hopefully, as good, the best photos I can, and be, put myself and my passengers in the best position. That's the plan.
And so do you need to, are people able to photograph from the Zodiac, or do you need to get?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Cameras are out the whole time. Okay. I'm photographing the whole time. I mean, other than I'm driving with one hand on my tiller. So I'm not doing both, but I'm stopping and starting all the time. But no, I'm photographing hundreds of photos every hour or two that I'm out there. Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, that segues into my next kind of bunch of questions, which is really about your photography. You seem to have a really good eye for these little intimate moments. Again, especially with the penguins. I mean, they seem like they're really social animals, right? So maybe it's not that hard to find those nice little moments where they're looking at each other, or they're kind of, I don't know, snuggling or whatever they do. I mean, is it quite easy to find that, or do you feel like you have a really good eye for it?
I'm not sure. I don't know if it's easy to find it, but I definitely have I put in the time, and that's what you need. That's the key, I think, to most photography, especially wildlife photography. You really need to put in the time to find the right situations with behavior. Then it would be also with light. And like I was saying before, like the background or the foreground and all that, for all the elements to come together, kind of have to be a bit of luck. And if you're doing these things over and over and over again, you're going to get lucky once in a while. So, so yeah, no, I think I know what I'm looking for. That's for sure. And that just came through time, through going back down there now for 8 seasons, kind of after certain things. And now I know all the areas that I visit, so I tend to know where to go to find these things, whereas my first few years I had no idea. Basically, I was just driving around hoping for the best, where now I kind of like know exactly where to go.
That's really valuable from the guest's point of view, if you have a guide with that much experience who just knows where to go. So I'm sure they'll be really grateful to have you on board.
Yeah, hopefully they have a good time, and we find some good situations with the wildlife. That's the plan. We have a lot of good guides that have been doing it for years and years down there. So yeah, I obviously learned off some of the guys and girls that I work with, of course. They have a lot of experience. So
So just, I was looking down your Instagram feed, and I can see from some of the captions, it seems like you have a really good grasp of the animal behavior. I'm sure that must come from just your experience, and like you were saying, being around the other sort of educators on the ship. But do you feel like having knowledge of the animal behavior gives you an advantage with the photography?
Yeah, for sure. Spending time around the animals and observing them, and kind of you get a feel, especially with the penguins, they're pretty predictable. Like I tend to know like, I don't know exactly what they're thinking, but I can kind of tell when they're about to, let's say, for example, there's a bunch of Adelie penguins on the edge of ice. I kind of like have a feeling of, are they thinking about making a move into the water, which is kind of what I want to photograph, of them diving in the water, or are they kind of like settled in here and they're going to be here for an hour, which we don't want to sit and wait for an hour. So yeah, these like experience and like hanging around or working with other wildlife experts that kind of I learned off through time and just by observing through years and kind of knowing sort of what they're thinking or what they're going to do.
Let's have a talk about penguins for a bit then. So you've got the sense of their behavior, when they're going to go, when they're going to not go. It looks like you're able to get really close and about to them at times. And so I was curious about that process. You said before that you have to keep a safe distance, but How do you do that kind of safely and make sure that you're not creeping out the animals?
Yeah, so we keep 5 meters away from them when they're on shore, and further from when we're in our boat, of course, further away. But they tend to be quite curious, and it depends from penguin to penguin species. But they can come to us. There's no 5 meter rule for them. So if they decide that they want to come to us, they will, and definitely certain ones will. But to a point, for the most, unless they're like quite young, sometimes they'll come up and like peck our boots or whatnot. But the adults will like keep their like 1 or 2 meter distance at all times. They'll come close and then they'll kind of think about it and then go the other way. But yeah, you can get quite close with. It just depends on the different type of penguin species. Yeah, they all act just a little bit different, and some are more curious than others.
Okay, and so again, with experience, you get a sense for those subtle differences.
Yeah, for sure. Like knowing how to behave or around certain type of penguins. Maybe if you're, for example, if you sit here and stay dead still with maybe an emperor penguin, and you see it coming towards you, it's probably going to come right up to you, within a foot, and just kind of like look you up and down, trying to figure out exactly what's going on. Whereas maybe a chinstrap penguin, for example, will just completely avoid you and just walk straight past you and not pay any attention at all.
And so when that emperor comes over, what's the protocol for you? You just have to stay still, or?
Yeah, just stay still, and that's it. That's fine. They can come to us. There's no rule. We just have to keep our distance from them. But you know, it would bother them more if you stood up and walked away to get your 5 meters, as opposed to just sitting there still and don't say anything and just observe what the penguin's doing, which is observing us as well.
Yeah, that must be quite special. For you, I guess you've seen that many, many times, but that must be quite a thrill for the guests if an emperor penguin comes straight over to them.
Yeah, emperors don't see them. I've only seen them actually twice. It's very difficult to see emperor penguins, but yes, definitely emperor penguins are absolutely amazing and unreal thrill for passengers to view them and observe them that close is unbelievable.
This is turning into like a penguin podcast now rather than a photography
okay,
one.
That's okay.
I've just from looking at your Instagram again, I feel like you might have a favorite penguin. And is it the Adelie? Is that right?
Yeah. Okay. So when we do most of our trips to Antarctica, it's to the Antarctic Peninsula. And on the peninsula, there's three main penguins. It's the Adelie, the Gentoo, and the Chinstrap. So of those, the three majors that we see basically on every trip, definitely the Adelie. They have a lot of personality. Maybe not the most intelligent. I'm not sure, not 100% sure on that, but they're pretty wild. They look like they like having a good time. And they can be quite curious of us as well, which can make for good photos. They show lots of personality. But overall, it would be the emperor, but as my favorite penguin, just because, I mean, they're the largest, probably the most beautiful. They're very curious, super photogenic. But I don't see them very often. Like I said, in 8 years, I've seen them twice. It's very difficult to get to their colonies. They nest in winter, so we have to go there. They nest on sea ice. They don't nest on land. So to get there, we have to take a big icebreaker and then take helicopters to them or near them, a mile away, and then we have to hike in to their colony. So they're very expensive trips and not something. We don't have an icebreaker on hand. We have to get an icebreaker off from Russia. So it's actually only happened once, one season in my 8 years. So,
okay. Yeah, that does sound expensive when you have to bring the icebreaker all the way down there.
And icebreakers and helicopters, that's always sounds like a lot of money, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm sure someone can afford that. So
yeah, there's a few people, yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I love some of these shots, like I've said. Well, we'll get into a couple of specific shots later, but I just think the way that you frame and scale the shots with the penguins being small in the shots with the sort of scale of the iceberg, it's totally amazing. And some just terrific shots there. Okay, we'll come back to that later. I wanted to ask you as well about polar bears. What is your experience with polar bears, and is it safe? That's my concern. I'm worried about your safety here.
My experience with polar bears, yeah, was working in the Arctic. Whenever you're in the Arctic, Canadian Arctic, Norway, which is, we go to the Svalbard archipelago. Mm-hmm. That's like the main hub, basically. I've been in Russia, northern Siberian islands. Yeah, everywhere you go, there's going to be polar bears. And is it safe? Yeah, we're all trained with firearms in case of emergency. And we're in our boats, and we keep a very, very far distance from the polar bears. So, yeah, there's never any close encounters with polar bears on land at all. If we do see them on land, we're jumping in our boats, and we're out of there.
Again, that must be quite a thrill to see those guys in the wild as well. So most of the time, would you be going back to the ship to see those, or you'd be staying on the main ship when you see those and shooting with a long lens?
Yeah, for the most part, when we do observe the polar bears, it's from the ship, and that's where we're like looking with our binos and our scopes for them as we're kind of cruising around the islands. They can be quite difficult to find. But occasionally we will see them when we're on the Zodiac, keeping our distance, of course. For me, that's a better opportunity to shoot instead of shooting down from a ship that's maybe I'm 20 meters up. Now I'm shooting from on the water level, from their eye level. So that's kind of something I'm looking for and hoping for, is when I'm on my Zodiacs that we will find a polar bear in a good situation. It doesn't happen very often, to be fair. It's much more difficult. And again, we have to keep quite a distance, so it can be quite a challenge.
So do you get, when it's the Arctic, do you get a lot of seals up there as well?
Yeah, seals, walrus, ring seal, bearded seal. But again, they're trying to keep their distance from us as well. They're quite wary of predators, being polar bear. So you can't get very close to them either. Whereas in Antarctica, we do keep our distance, but you could get as close as you want, and they're not moving pretty much at all. Whereas in the Arctic, the seals are on the move if you get within a unsafe distance for them.
And once they're gone into the water, they must be very fast, I can imagine.
They're spooked. They're into the water. They're ready. They're just on ice, and they'll just dive in the water right away. Yeah. Yeah. And you can get, with a long lens, you're totally fine. But, yeah, you don't get the close encounters that you get in Antarctica.
Some of your shots, you have some really terrific shots of icebergs and ice. And just these seem like these sculptures almost are just kind of floating around. What's it like to be in amongst that kind of broken up ice and those impressive icebergs?
Oh, it's amazing. I was going to say it's my favorite part, but I always say make this mistake. I'm like, oh, that's my favorite part, but the penguins are my favorite part. So I have quite a few favorite parts, but maybe the ice is the unsung hero in Antarctica. It is absolutely unbelievable. And like you said, like floating pieces of art, that they're always changing. You're never going to see the same one twice. So it's kind of this, every time we go out in our Zodiacs, especially in some areas where there are known to be many, many icebergs. It's super exciting trying to find like the best one, best shapes, best light, the deeper blue. It's great. Yeah. And then for me, if I want iceberg, then I'm looking for iceberg with penguin on it. So these like little, I guess, challenges or things I'm kind of like searching for when I'm out there to kind of like the cherry on top or something to make it a little better. Could be a seal on it as well, but, and in the Arctic, I guess a polar bear on it. Yeah.
It just adds something extra, doesn't it? When you have the penguin on there, some terrific shots there.
Yeah. It adds, like you talked about scale before. That's why, sure, you can see an iceberg that maybe, you know, it's a football stadium, massive iceberg, but without some sort of scale, sure, I remember it, but if I show anyone else that photo, no one's going to know how large that was. So that's why it helps having something that someone back home recognizes, whether that be a wildlife or maybe even a Zodiac in the frame.
So some of your shots I've seen are underwater shots. Do you do that a lot?
Unfortunately, I don't do it a lot. And most of those, all of those are taken with just like a GoPro. I worked with this Japanese photographer, videographer, man that was on a couple of trips years ago. And he used to walk around with this giant 7-meter pole with a GoPro on it. And he looked a little silly to me at first, to be honest. He'd walk around the ship with this huge pole. I didn't think much of it. And then he offered it. He was leaving after his trip finished, and he offered if I wanted to keep the pole. So I was like, sure. So I tried it, and I put it underwater. And I realized once I put it underwater, now I can, instead of like normally having a 1-meter pole, and now I have this like 7-meter pole that I can get really, really like deep or far different directions. And it kind of like changed the game for me for filming underwater and taking the odd photo underwater. But again, I'm shooting with a GoPro, so it's kind of, I kind of need to figure something out with a bigger camera and a housing, but then it's getting quite expensive and it's kind of difficult to shoot underwater because you're shooting blind essentially. Mm-hmm. I'm not diving underwater, which some people do. So how I do it with my GoPro is I'm like sending it to take a raw photo every second, and I'm like putting it underwater and just hoping that some penguin or something will get in the frame. Mm-hmm. So I have basically like 500 photos, and I'm just like looking through quickly to see if there's anything to work with at all. For the usually, honestly, nothing. So it's quite frustrating and time consuming.
Yeah.
It's good for video. It's not so good for stills, but like you've seen a few photos, so I do try it once in a while.
Mm. There's this is going to sound completely lame to you, but we're in Edinburgh Zoo here, right? They've got quite a big penguin enclosure.
Oh, and, do they?
Nice. Yeah, and you can go around sort of round the side, and they've got like windows into the water.
Yeah.
And you know, you see the penguins kind of waddling on the surface. When you see them in the water, it's just like the most magnificent thing you can see.
Unbelievable, eh? Yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah, just you can see they're truly at home when they're in the water. Yeah. Mm. When I like what you're seeing there, when I take my GoPro out and put it on my computer and look at the video of them swimming underwater and slow it down, it's unbelievable. Yeah, I love it. I love watching them swimming underwater. They're so comfortable down there. Seabirds, truly.
Yeah, it's amazing. So the other thing I wanted to ask you about was I saw on your Instagram that you'd been to Zambia. And
that kind of
sounds like quite a different experience than your polar adventures. What was it that brought you there?
Slightly different. I went to Zambia with, it's called Plan Canada. Plan is a charity worldwide, but I was working on with the Canadian branch. And we went out there to just get content actually for their media out here in Canada. So I went with a friend of mine, a videographer friend of mine, to just to get content. So we just visited villages in Zambia, basically, for a week, which is really amazing. Yeah, quite different than Antarctica. Quite a bit warmer.
And so, strange question maybe, but from you must be quite used to going out with the camera, you know, when you're at work at the expeditions. I want to make sure I say the right word. What carried over for you photography wise from the poles into Zambia? What kind of things did you find yourself doing that were common skills or approaches?
Common skills. Well, when I am in Antarctica, since I'm like a expedition photographer, I am taking photos of I make like a video montage of the whole trip, every trip, quite a lot of work. And so I am taking photos of people, kind of not like portraits, but more candid kind of photos. So I am taking people in nature kind of thing. So that's kind of what I was doing there. I was taking photos of villages and certain younger girls, actually. That's what the charity was based for, based on, in their environment, essentially. So it kind of carries over a little bit. It's quite different, of course. But yeah, and I do that kind of work back here in Canada when I'm free. I do like portraits or families, and I do the odd wedding. So quite different than what I do in Antarctica.
Yeah. So does that keep you going in the times when you're not away?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's going to have to be a little bit more now that I have two kids here now, so I won't be able to go to these remote places for months on end anymore. Yeah. I got to open up my skills a little bit more and do some more people shots rather than penguin shots.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because it does seem slightly not conducive with family life. But would you feel like you'll still be able to do that a little bit, or how do you see that going?
I'm not so sure now that I have two kids. Well, I've had one, she's 3.5 now, so I've been doing with her for 3 years. I've been going away and it's kind of worked well. My wife gets a bit of a break from me and I can go away for like a month at a time. But now with two kids, it's quite difficult for my wife to look after them alone. So we'll see. We're on hold right now, of course, due to this pandemic, like most things. So I won't be going back till next August. I go to Russia, and then Antarctica starts in November, a year from basically now. Okay. But I really want to go back down there for sure.
Let's see. Let's talk about cameras and so on now. So what would you bring out? What's your go-to camera and lens combination?
My go-to camera lens, I use Canon. I use Canon 5D Mark IVs. And for the most part, when I'm out, if I look back at all my photos through the years, they're mostly taken with a 70 to 200 2.8 lens, maybe with an extender on it.
Okay.
Now, is that the best combination? I don't think so anymore. Now I've kind of like, I think the new 100 to 400 Canon have the new one. It's been on a few years now, I think, but it's their volume 2, I think is the best combination for what we do on our trips. That goes for the Arctic and the Antarctic. So a 100 to 400. And then on my other camera body, I have a wide angle lens, so it could be anything. I have a 16 to 35, lens on there. But yeah, so a nice zoom lens and then a nice wide angle lens is good for me.
I know that 100 to 400 is a popular and handy lens. I know some I'm shooting Nikon, they don't have that, but and I can imagine the Canon 70 to 200 is probably like for like with a Nikon one, very very sharp all the way through. Just great lens to have, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's a great lens to have, super sharp. But I just found that like when I'm mostly shooting when I'm on my Zodiac, and I just get a little more distance with the 400 and some things aren't as so close most of the time. So with the 200, maybe I was just a little bit far away, I found.
Yeah. So what else comes with you? I was wondering if you have like a weight or space limitation with being on the ship. What other stuff typically comes with you? You've got second body and a wide lens. Any other bits and bobs?
No, I don't have a weight limitation. So I'm flying from Canada to Argentina. I can bring as much as I want. So no, I have lots of gear. I bring, all my lenses. Basically I have like primes. I have a 35-50. I have a 300 millimeter lens, 2.8 lens, which is nice. That's good. I've only had that a few years. And, so that's super helpful. But again, like on a Zodiac, you're moving around all the time, you kind of, the zoom is super helpful. With the fixed 300, it's a bit of a pain, because then luckily I control the boat, so I can actually get into certain situations. But for the most part, it's much much more handy to have that that zoom range. What else do I have? I have GoPro, I have that huge pole like I mentioned, I have tripod, and computer, of course, a laptop, lots of memory cards, of course, and other bits and bobs here. Too much stuff, to be honest. And when I carry them on my boat in the morning, I always have like so much gear. Yeah, it's nice to simplify it and not bring so much, but it's hard not to. So
I know what you mean. So I can imagine what if you're on that little boat and it's wobbling around a little bit, you've got a 200 or 300 on there, that's going to be a little bit tricky to just to get a steady shot. So you must be working at a really fast shutter speed.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Of course, trial and error through the years, and I've made so many errors, especially like the biggest error I've made throughout is shutter speed, is not having fast enough shutter speed. I usually shoot in aperture priority. So I'm usually like watching the shutter speed and kind of aware of a situation like penguins diving in the water. I want to get 1/1000th of a second minimum. But sometimes, you know, I'm driving a boat, I've got passengers there, lots is going on. I make a mistake and I look at my photo, go back on my photos after the fact, and I maybe shot it at 1/640th of a second. Maybe it was a darker, slightly darker shadowy scene. And I just know those photos aren't going to be sharp. So disappointment right away. So I'm trying to like keep my shutter speed up higher. And like you said, with the bobbing boat, if it is a little bit rougher out that day, yeah, you want to like up your shutter speed as well. So it's kind of just, yeah, that's a, you bring up a big mistake that I've made many, 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 many times throughout my years down there for sure.
Yeah, no, but it's really tricky though, especially with long lenses, and you must have that fast shutter speed. So
yeah,
I wonder if you ever rely on auto ISO, and you know how you can sort of program a bracket of shutter speeds using the auto ISO so that your shutter speed would never go lower than whatever you want it to go to.
You know, I don't ever do that, and maybe I should, but the reason I don't is because, again, I'm not always just shooting things that are fast. For the most part, maybe it's just a still iceberg with a penguin standing on it. I don't need that 1/1000, so I don't want my ISO all the way up there. So basically, I'm just like doing it in manual all the time, and kind of not manual mode, aperture mode, but like thinking about it manual, which is a bit about the same anyway. So I'm changing my ISO all the time. Yeah, it's just about being basically on the ball and just like remembering and being aware of what's happening all the time.
It sounds a bit like if I go on safari, you know, like we've been saying, sometimes you do need that fast shutter speed, but you don't always. And so when you don't need it, it's just taxing the ISO for no reason.
Yeah,
so,
right.
Yeah, you need to have the flexibility, but be able to quickly get to where you need it to get to. Let me know if I'm wrong here, but it must be really, really cold, right? So, and I was wondering if it's ever tricky to use the camera because of having bulky gear on or big gloves or something like that.
For the most part, it's not that cold as you'd think. Most tourists, we'll just say Antarctica now, are quite surprised how, not warm, but not as cold as you'd think, maybe because you're thinking Antarctica and the South Pole, but the South Pole is at the center of the continent and its daily average is minus 60, I think. So it's not like that. It's more like anywhere from like -1 Celsius to plus 10 almost. The average day is probably like 2 to 3 Celsius. So if it's 2 to 3 Celsius and we're on the water and it's not windy and the sun's out, it can be like really warm. Like for the most part, I don't wear gloves. I'm driving a boat with a tiller and the wind's hitting it. And I'm sure I'm used to it throughout the years, but yeah, I don't wear gloves most of the time, but but again, when it gets windy and water's spraying and now my hands are getting wet, it can be quite difficult for sure. It can get really cold really quickly. So its conditions can change a lot. Yeah. When we saw the emperor penguins, which I talked about before, that's earlier in the season. That's on sea ice. So it's much more unprotected. And there it got really cold. It got minus 20, I believe, and with high wind. So it was quite a challenge. I believe the trip before mine, I was told that one passenger got frostbite on his finger because he didn't stop taking photos. He just he was out there and it was like minus 30, I believe. And he was just taking photos. Dear. It wouldn't stop. And he got frostbite on his finger. I think he lost his finger.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Probably thinking he paid a lot of money for that
trip. Well, it was, yeah, like I said, it's such a rare trip and he paid a lot of money and it was,
yeah,
it's pretty exciting when you're there. But so what am I wearing? I'm not wearing much. I'm wearing like underlayers, one pair of long johns, maybe two if it's a really cold day, and then mid layer, and then just wearing like my Gore-Tex outers, like waterproof layers, because when we're on the Zodiac, it can get wet quite easily. Yeah, it can get really wet, so you got to be prepared for that.
That's really interesting insight to what you do, and with that type of wildlife, it's a completely different world for me. So it's really interesting to hear all about it. This brings us to a special round where I like to ask you about one of your pictures in particular, and this round is called Double Exposure. And so I'll ask you about one of your shots, which I think is really cool or interesting, and maybe there's a shot of yours that's a particularly memorable experience that you can tell us about as well.
Okay.
So I've got a few pictures here that I've kind of screen grabbed on my side, and I'm not sure which one to go with. So there's one of, it's on an iceberg, there's a group of penguins and they're in the middle of the frame, and the shape that they're sitting on is almost like the sort of Nike logo right in the center of the frame on the iceberg. That is, I mean, it's an incredible shot. Can you tell us about the story behind that one?
If it's the one I think you're speaking of, it's a bunch of Gentoo penguins, and they're sitting on this, yeah, very textured, perfect, kind of exactly what I was kind of speaking of before, what I was looking for. So on this day, I was actually just out. We were just waiting to pick up passengers, and my expedition leader is like, oh, go off for 20 minutes. And I knew kind of the area. It's by a place called Danko Island, that there can be a lot of Gentoo penguins in the water there. So my colleague and I like sped off, and we're looking, and I'm scanning, and I don't see anything. There was no penguins anywhere. There's lots of huge icebergs there, but I couldn't see any penguins. And then in my binos, far off in the distance, I could see these group of penguins high up on this iceberg, and that's kind of rare. Usually they're like near the waterline. So I got quite excited, and it was about a year ago actually, and we sped off towards them, and that, yeah, there was all these Gentoos kind of on this like perfect little lookout, looking down on us, and on the perfect iceberg with like a great background, a nice cloudy day, which I like, so not many harsh shadows, not much glare coming off the ice. So yeah, it was kind of like a perfect scene, kind of something I've always looking for. And that was it for sure.
So they're on this kind of big chunk of iceberg, and I can see like at the top of the frame behind, there's a darker color and texture. Is that like the rest of the iceberg, or what is that?
That's the peninsula, actually. That's mainland Antarctica behind them there.
Okay.
There, it's like a, yeah, that's like an open face, basically. Yeah, like a cliff. So no snow's like, or ice has like been stuck on there through time.
It just adds something to the shot. It's really
does great it? Okay. To have that there. Yeah, I kind of like look at it, and I don't know. Yeah, I flip-flop on these kind of things. You know how it is.
I think if it was a white sky or something, obviously it wouldn't be as, and the color seems to kind of,
yeah, no, you're right. It goes against the ice. Yeah, it's nice. Yeah.
The other one I was quite keen to ask you about was, it's on the top line of your Instagram feed.
It's
like an iceberg, I think.
Yeah, it's got
different kind of, I don't know if you would say like fingers sort of coming towards you. It's really quite a striking image. What can you tell us about that one?
Yeah, this is an iceberg I found again. This was last year. Unbelievable. We don't really see icebergs too much. So this is an iceberg that's been flipped upside down. It's quite common that these icebergs are turning over all the time. You can tell if an iceberg hasn't really flipped. It's come off the glacier and is still floating. You can tell by the top of it hasn't gone underwater. See all the if you look at all the certain textures in the on those like dimples there, that kind of tells me right away that iceberg has been underwater and it's been eroded by like little micro currents going through the water. It's been underwater like obviously a very long time, and all these kind of like fingers have been eroded out, and they've kind of luckily for me flipped up, and I just randomly came across it and was like, wow, yeah, that's like the best. It's not like your true, your typical like large iceberg. It's just very different kind of scene, but super cool.
That little piece of ice in the foreground really helps as well. That's just a gift. That's amazing.
Oh cool. Yeah, kind of look for something, you know, something a little bit like a focal point, I guess. Interesting to put in there. Of course, I was there for a while taking like tons of different images, trying different things, but yeah, that kind of like stood out for me as well. Thanks.
Let me ask one more. There's one
where, go for it. No worries.
I'm going to try and find this on your feed, but I'll describe it. There's really jagged mountains in the background, and there's a line of penguins along a shoreline, or sort of a rocky shoreline. The picture's kind of flat in a way, but the background, it obviously looks like it's shot with a long lens to bring those mountains to really compress the perspective.
I don't see it, but I know what photo you're talking about. I think it's on south. It's most likely on South Georgia. It kind of looks like the Alps behind it. Is that right?
Yeah.
So that's an island called South Georgia. It's off of Antarctica. It's in the sub Antarctic islands. It's about six to 700 miles off of the continent. And that's home to king penguins. So in that photo, that's a bunch of king penguins just sitting at the waterline, kind of just resting or waiting to go into the water when it's either safe or they kind of, well, whatever they feel like. I'm just bobbing in the ocean there with my Zodiac, and The island is very picturesque, of course, on its own without penguins. But if I can throw penguins in the scene, I like that scene there for sure. Yeah,
sure. It's a great observation and nicely shot as well. So I was wondering if there's one shot or one moment from your photography journey that's really stood out as unforgettable or a brilliant shot or something that just took you to a different place. Anything really memorable?
There's a few, but maybe we'll talk about, since we're on South Georgia there, going to the island of South Georgia and going to shore for the first time and visiting a king penguin colony. They could have anywhere from 10,000 to hundreds of thousands of penguins in a colony, mm-hmm. where I hadn't been to this island in my first couple of years working in Antarctica. Most colonies in the peninsula of Antarctica have up to 7,000 penguins. So large, but not hundreds of thousands. Mm. So when you arrive on shore and see the scene of hundreds of thousands of nesting penguins is quite overwhelming. The noise, the smell.
It's endless, endless, endless scene of penguins. So yeah, I was talking about this with someone on a call last week about, we were talking about visiting, you know, traditional villages or tribal villages in Africa, mm-hmm. and we can see the pictures of the Maasai or whoever you're visiting, but you're not prepared for the sort of the other sensory experience of it, because right. they have the cattle and there's a smell that goes with that and just the heat of it as well. So maybe it's something like that where you must have known you were going to see some penguins, but there's the whole of the rest of your senses come alive in that moment as well.
Yeah, exactly that. Well, yeah, perfectly said. Yeah, this, the, like I said, the noise is just never stops. The smell is, it's overwhelming for some. Kind of get used to it, but it can be a little bit nasty for some. And then the visualization is just unbelievable. So yeah, it's quite overwhelming. And as a photographer being there, it's quite overwhelming because you feel like you're in this unbelievable spot and you feel like you should be getting the greatest photos ever. And maybe it's difficult to find the right shots. You don't know if you should be doing wide angle shots, zoom shots. There's just so much going on. How do you concentrate on one penguin when there's another hundreds of thousands others? So kind of just have to slow down, take it all in as well, and put down the camera as well, and kind of realize where you are. Yeah.
I think that's great advice. Okay, thanks for sharing that. That brings us on to another special round called Motor Drive, and this is a quick fire round. Okay.
Sure.
Okay, ready? Here goes. Okay, wide angle or telephoto?
Telephoto.
Head or heart?
Head.
Okay, this round, this question is about movies, okay? Ice Age or Happy Feet?
Oh, Happy Feet.
Okay, just, and that's an expert opinion, so this is exactly what the listeners are tuning in to find out. Okay, what was the last great book, movie, series, or album you experienced?
The Queen's Gambit.
Ah.
Amazing. Really, yeah. really enjoyed it. Yeah, fantastic.
Okay, expensive lens cloth or just the corner of your shirt?
Oh, corner of the shirt, yeah.
Okay, what's a weird or unusual thing I can find in your camera bag?
Hand warmers.
Okay. I don't think that's too weird in your line of work. But okay.
It's not too weird? Okay. Oh, you can find penguin guano probably too, small bits of it. Yeah.
Okay, it's the first time we've had that answer.
Yeah.
What is one thing you wish you'd known 5 years ago?
Having two kids is very, very difficult.
So who's your favorite photographer at the moment?
At the moment, I guess his name is Jay Guzman. J-G-U-Z-M-A-N-N-N. He's a landscape photographer, but really striking images and his images really pop out. When I see his photos on Instagram, I know they're his, which is pretty special. There's only a few photographers where I see their photos and I pretty much know, I would put money on it's theirs. So he's got some style to his I quite like.
Yeah, well, that is unusual with the amount of images that we're seeing. So I'll put a link in the show notes so people can find that. And is there a dream location or project you'd love to shoot?
I have a few. I guess I was talking to a lady yesterday that was at the Great Migration in Africa. So that would probably be in my top three. There's a few different African journeys that I'd like to go on for sure. Mm. I'd like to go back to Snow Hill Island, which is where we visit the emperor penguins.
So last one, when do you feel at peace with the universe?
When I'm bobbing around in my little Zodiac in Antarctica. Yeah, for sure.
I can imagine that. What does the future look like for you? I mean, it's a bit tricky with the pandemic, but more polar adventures on the cards?
Yeah, for sure. I have like contracts with my work for next season. Next year, I go to Russia to Severnaya Zemlya, which is a Russian archipelago north of Siberia that I went to last year on a sailboat. So I'm going back there next August. Mm. And then and then in November, I'll be going to Antarctica for a month or two for the season. The season runs from November to March.
Great. And where can people go to connect with you, support you, find out more about what you do?
Instagram is probably the best. It's under my name, David Marin. But if messages come in, I always respond for sure.
Thanks a lot, David. I want to thank you for sharing your knowledge there. I'd really recommend people to go and check out your Instagram, because we've spoken a lot about penguins, but a lot of the iceberg shots, just as I'm scrolling down now, are just phenomenal. Amazing places to be. And you've captured them so, so well. So thanks for that, and thanks for your time.
Thanks, mate. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. Follow David on Instagram. The link is in the show notes. And if you like this episode, also check out my conversation with Julian Terreros-Martin. That's season 1. Episode 5. Don't forget to subscribe, rate and review the podcast. It really helps the visibility of the show, and you can connect with me on Instagram. That's it for now. Enjoy your photography, be kind. I will see you out there.